is Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and the show today is coming from Kincaid Park. There's no snow yet, but hopefully we don't have to wait too long, and there's a big group of people out here doing volunteer trail work, trying to get some of the trails really smooth so that it won't take as much snow when it finally comes. And so I came out just to kind of help out and also to see what was going on. Met a lot of interesting people, many of whom I already know, or I know them through somebody else, and we're just pulling up sticks and taking care of the trails. And that's our topic today on Outdoor Explorer. And right now I'm with Tamara Cornfield, who is the program director for the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, and kind of pulled this whole thing together. Right, Tamara?
Yeah, thanks for coming out today, Charles.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful fall day to be out on the trails.
So what are we going to try to accomplish today?
Well, today we are walking the trails, and like you said, we're trying to make sure that the trails are as skiable as possible. As soon as there's any snow, we have a smooth surface, and so you can come out and ski with just a few inches.
And this particular trail is kind of sort of down the middle, down for those who ski a lot at Mises Folly and Hairpin Hill, and so it's one of the more advanced trails. Why was this one chosen?
Well, actually, we do a new trail system every year, so every summer we'll hit a trail that hasn't been seen in about 10 years. So there's a 10-year cycle for each trail.
Oh, so this one, just the number came up.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And this one hasn't been done for a while. And you can tell from the other trails that you kind of get a little bit of a rut after a while. So everyone kind of falls into this one little spot, and that curves the trail, and then it takes more snow for us to get to ski it. And it's just better for the trail, even for summer users, to have a smooth trail. That way we can mow it and you can have a big group on it. And yeah, it's just better for everybody.
So are you planting grass on the trail as well?
Yeah, they laid some grass in August, so it's starting to come up now, and then we'll keep taking care of it next summer, and it'll blossom into a beautiful trail.
Cool. So it looks like you've got a pretty good-sized crew. I don't know if you've counted how many, and there are some donuts at the beginning, and people with tools. I guess they probably brought a lot of their own tools. How do you get people to come out to do this kind of work?
We did a couple ways. We posted on our Facebook, we put it on online, and then we send e-blasts to our members. But it really is important for people to come out. You know, this is the best way to support trails along with your donations, is to come out and be a part of all of our volunteer opportunities. And yeah, this one is great. We have people of all ages and abilities, and it's important because these are our trails. We want to make sure that we're giving just as much with our back and our sweat as much as we are with our pocketbook.
Yeah, right. So if you don't, if you can't write a $1,000 check or whatever, you can definitely come out and help. Although I imagine everybody here probably has already bought their trail pin and is probably already a big supporter.
Oh yeah, these are definitely our members. And some of these people have been out here working on these trails since they were originally built. So we definitely want to get that new crew in of, you know, younger people and new volunteers to really understand, like, oh, this actually is my responsibility to help make these trails great, because Anchorage is an active place and we love our trail systems and we're really lucky to have them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of passing on to the next generation is really important. I would think that, I mean, sort of the stereotype of the millennial is that they love, like, doing do-it-yourself and being involved in community stuff, right? And that might fit you, actually.
Oh, yeah. I think we do want to give. I think the hard part is, you know, we have so many things that we want to do, but we do need to understand that those are all given to us by the past generation. And if we want those still to be great, we need to step up and take charge and take some ownership of those things.
So I'm interested in that generational aspect, in how you are reaching out to that new group of people. I mean, if you go to any of the citizen races, obviously there's lots of young people there racing. But as I look around the group that is gathered here today, it's mostly people around my age, which is a bit older. Mm-hmm. How are you? What strategies do you have to sort of reach out?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to do a better job with social media, which is a really good way to get the younger crowd involved and to at least be aware. And we're trying to make all of our events more fun and better received by recreational skiers. So this isn't just for elite skiers or people who have lived in Anchorage all their life. It's for people who are brand new to this to the trails and to the sport in general, and even just to summer users, I think it's important for all those people to be aware. So yeah, we're working on a number of fronts to try to get them to be aware of that.
So how do you reach out to the recreational skier or the beginner or the person who doesn't maybe ski yet and thinks that they might like to, but maybe they'll buy a fat tire or bike instead, or maybe they'll do any number of other things instead. Mm-hmm. What's the sort of the strategy for getting them involved?
I think it's actually a bit of a struggle, but we have a number of methods that we're all hoping will kind of culminate in a better understanding of why these trails are here and that everybody's using them. We do signs on the trails themselves in the winter and in the summer, and we do have some PSAs. We had a videographer out today, so he took some footage, so we're trying to send the message through video that these people are out volunteering, participating, and supporting their trails monetarily. A number of fronts.
Yeah, cool. So I'm curious as to the impact of climate change on involvement in the ski club or the ski association, as we call it these days, and in these kinds of volunteer activities, because we went through three really bad snow years where I saw a lot of people I knew who were diehard skiers getting on fat bikes or doing something else. And then we had one good year, which was last winter, and we're hoping for another good one, obviously, this year. What was the impact on membership and involvement and just the general sort of circumstances for the ski community?
Yeah, I think we're definitely struggling with that in the office. Even this last winter was a pretty good winter for snow, but because we were coming off of two pretty difficult winters where we were just using the snowmaking loop, we did lose a lot of numbers in participation, so for our races, and as well as membership, because I think people think if I'm not skiing, I don't need to support the trails, when in reality, it is a year-round maintenance effort. It's a difficult thing, and we are relying on snowmaking a lot, even for the early season. We don't know if it's going to be a good winter or not, so we still have to put that effort in, and it takes a lot of funds to produce snowmaking, which we're going to be relying on for probably the next many years.
Yeah, well, looks like everybody needs direction here, so I'll let you. Are we lost?
No.
Determining the best way.
Yeah, hopefully we know our way around by now, right? Yeah. So, do you feel like people maybe just got out of the habit of buying their trail pin if it's not snowing and you're not skiing, you might not think of doing it, right? Because it's like, well, you pay for the activities you're actually doing, but the costs are still there.
Yeah, and I think we might have, maybe we didn't keep up with the marketing strategy that we should have had. Maybe we should have been doing it on many fronts when really we just kind of focused on the people who'd been giving year after year. But that small percentage of skiers and trail users are subsidizing the rest of Anchorage. And so getting everyone to realize that and spreading out all of the support will help NSAA be here in the long run.
Yeah, well, it's sort of maybe a rebuilding thing, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely striving to do better, and I think we are doing a better job of getting more people to recognize their importance.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's one of those things that's it's kind of like public radio, actually, because you can be a freeloader, you can and just use the service and not pay for it. Mm-hmm. But if everyone does that, then it won't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get the people who are, have a little bit more community spirit who dive in and help. And then you're constantly trying to open that circle and make it bigger and get more people to feel that way, right?
Oh, yeah, that is definitely the struggle right there. Yeah. Yeah, you said it.
So how do you communicate with folks? I mean, because public radio, just take over the airways and bug them until they pay the money. You don't have that opportunity.
No, we don't, and we still are coming up with the best way of doing it, and we still haven't achieved that. It's hard to be out on the trails everywhere, because for Anchorage, there are so many access points, so you really can't meet everyone on the trail if you were at one spot to bring about awareness. So it's less kind of direct messaging and more just kind of a general net of messages.
Yeah. So, and one of the things people may not be aware of is that when we're not having a lot of snow, it's actually harder and more expensive to take care of the trails, right? Because it takes more effort and more wear and tear on the machines.
Yeah, that's accurate. And yeah, we rely a lot on our operations team, and it's really just a few guys who are just really capable guys. But yeah, they do everything from fixing the machines as they break, and that does happen when you have low snow and you're chopping up ice. And then it puts a lot of time on them and just a few volunteers to run snowmaking. And snowmaking is like a 24/7 job. So as soon as you get the right humidity and temperature, I mean, it's, you have to be out here monitoring it the whole time. So you're getting kind of a group together, and it's really time consuming.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me about other things that are happening for volunteers and how folks can find out about them.
Yeah, if you go online, it's anchoragenordicski.com, and there's a lot of ways to volunteer. I mean, if you're really, really set on helping with trails, there are opportunities to help with operations, but we also have opportunities in the office and at events. So all of our races and programs require volunteers, and all those opportunities can be found online.
Ooh, there's some bear scat.
Yeah, I heard we've had some active bears out here.
Yeah.
So it's good we're traveling in a group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's it feels like the forest, and I guess it is in a lot of ways, even though it's right in the city. Yeah, so these races, as recreational skiers, you might not think the races matter, or you might even think they're an annoyance because they might be on trails you want to use. But in fact, they're paying for a lot of this, right?
Yeah, they also are kind of subsidizing all of what we do, because for races, they're the only ones we can really charge to go out and groom for. But yeah, the races are meant for community recreational skiers. AMH Anchorage Cup will have a recreational wave this year. So it's a great way to get out, explore new trails, be in kind of a safe environment, and get to socialize.
Well, yeah, skiing can feel very solitary. And if you don't have a regular group that you ski with, you can go on one of these races and you'll meet a ton of other people like yourself. And even if you don't want to ski hard, you can still have fun.
Yeah.
And participate in the snacks and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, not just, yeah, meeting people is really important. And then you just, yeah, you get that kind of sense of community when you're around a bunch of people doing the same thing.
All right. Cool. So anything else you want to add?
No, other than that AnchorageNordicSki.com is a way that you can donate and become a member of Nordic Skiing, which is supporting your trails all year long for walkers, runners, bikers, and skiers.
And it's sort of at whatever level you want to do, right?
Yeah, whatever you can give is going towards your trails and will be helpful.
Yeah, so you can find that at outdoorexplorer.org. We'll have a link to the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. And, well, I guess we're going to get to work here. We got a lot of trail to work on and sort of find out what that's all about. So stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. All right, Pete Mios. That's how you say it, right?
Correct.
So how did you hear about this trail work? Just see it on Facebook or something, or phone call?
No, it was an email from NSAA, Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, from the director, Tamara Cornfield, calling all volunteers, and we've done this for several years.
Yeah, I kind of felt this surge of enthusiasm when I saw the post, because I really have wanted to go skiing again. I mean, do you feel that way this time of year?
Always. Always, yeah. But this is also such a beautiful time of year to be out here. The colors, although the colors are late this year, I will admit. But it just, you know, a bunch of fitness advocates. You know, I've been a long time childhood obesity and fitness advocate, and you know, this contributes on, you know, all levels, four seasons. Yeah. And the ski club maintains these trails year round. It's not the city, but it's the Nordic Ski Club.
Yeah. Well, I think that this trail looks like it's in such fantastic shape that I almost think, like, what are we doing here? But I guess we're trying to get it to where the tiniest little bit of snow will be enough, right?
Yes, indeed. Right. And This is not, we aren't on a lighted trail here, but they've done significant work here. And I'm not sure, to be honest, why we've done this work this year. It might have been to bring it up to homologate it so that it's workable, competitive at an international level. But also I think it's developed crowns and it's developed ruts, and so they've come through here and done fantastic work, and we're just kind of doing the cleanup work before the snow falls.
Pretty easy, low-key, kind of fun way to spend a Saturday morning.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we've already had to dodge one big moose, and you know, there are rumors that there are bear in the neighborhood, and, you know, where else would you rather be?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you're kind of like just in Tamara's network, and she sends out an email, you get it, and you're one of the people who actually shows up.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. And we've got a group of, I'd guess, 15 or 20 out here today, mm-hmm. spread out. Mm-hmm. Tamara's directed us where to go.
Yeah, I saw some donuts back at the...
I'm the only one that's participated in the donuts so far, but it was excellent, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Thanks, Pete. Pleasure. All right, well, June Takagi is out here with a rake and a clipper. And what are you doing as you work along here?
Well, we are clearing roots and other things that are sticking up on the trail so that the groomers, once a little bit of snow falls, will have a smooth surface to groom on.
Yeah. So what brings you out here to do this on a Saturday morning? There's probably more fun things to be doing.
Well, my children both grew up on the ski trails in Anchorage. My younger son skis competitively for the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So
cool.
I owe it to the skiing community and NSAA in particular for what my kids do and the lifestyle that our family has had in Anchorage.
Uh-huh. Well, I see you're wearing a Sonat Kazoot. That's how you say it, right? Sonat?
No, this is a Fairbanks race.
Yeah, I've done that race, but I've heard it called the Sonat, but I'm not sure how you say the second word.
I think it's Kazoot.
Yeah.
My son raced in this and gave the hat to me.
So you get the hat for having the son, not for having done it yourself.
Right.
And you've got a Nanook jacket on, too.
Yes.
Cool. So, I mean, it seems like skiing can sort of take over the whole family when your kids get to that level, right? Is that sort of what happened with you?
That's what happened. He is a senior at UAF, uh-huh. so this is his last year skiing competitively.
Uh-huh.
But I train with the local ski club, Alaska Winter Stars, uh-huh. so it's still a family event.
Yeah. What's your son's name?
Seiji Takagi. Okay.
Neat. And so does he travel like all over the country and in the far field for his races?
Yes, he's gone to several junior national competitions, and with UAF, they are in the Rocky Mountain Intercollegiate. I can't remember what the...
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he'll be going to Utah and Colorado. Hopefully, he's fast enough on the team to make those trips.
How fun. So when did you get him into skiing? What was it? Was it like a junior Nordic 5-year-old kind of thing?
He was 7 because the first year he didn't want to do junior Nordic because he didn't know how to ski.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to get over the fact that
you
joined junior Nordic to learn how to ski.
Yeah.
So from second grade, and then he joined Alaska Winter Stars in 7th grade.
Uh-huh. When did you realize that he had exceptional talent?
We didn't.
Really?
No, because he was a chunky little preteen, and all of a sudden, his freshman year in high school, he grew a little bit, got trimmer, and got faster.
Oh, how cool. So you never know when they're going to bloom, right?
Exactly. Yeah, he was a late bloomer because he didn't even start competitively racing until 8th grade.
Huh. Well, I guess that's like one of these things. Like, and also, sometimes kids love skiing and then they just stop, too. You never know what they're going to do. That's like you plant the flower and that's what it does.
Yeah, exactly.
So are you looking forward to ski season? I mean, I sort of when I heard, like, we got to get the trails ready, I think, oh, yes, I want to ski again.
Yes. When September rolls around, we're ready for snow.
Uh-huh. Do you do the Winter Stars, like, summer training as well?
Yes, I do, all year long.
Okay. And that's kind of a fun social thing, too, right?
Yeah. And my son paid back the club by coaching this summer while he was home from college, so.
Did he coach you?
No, he coached the younger kids.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like my son coaching me.
I don't think so. Although he did coach me through a running race that he was in and had finished like 20 minutes before I did.
Yeah.
He met me up the last kilometer and motivated me.
Do you remember, I like thinking about like the time that my kids like start skiing faster than me, and it's always like this amazing thing, and they love it, and they try to be nice about it, but it's like a huge, huge day. Do you remember that with your son?
Well, that happened probably within a year of them starting
pretty
skiing.
Early.
They would both ski loops around me, uh-huh. if they even thought about skiing with me.
Uh-huh.
But every Christmas they will do that with me.
Oh, neat. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, June.
Yeah, thank you.
Back to work. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking today about trail work. Folks out at Kincaid Park on a Saturday morning fixing up the trails. And I also got a chance to talk to the people who do the professional work. That is, they work out there all the time, keeping the trails in good shape. In fact, year-round. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you guys doing?
Basically, we're kind of running around with our saws and trimming back some of these trees that are overhanging the trails that both rob snow and hit people on the top of the head.
So oh, I see. Yeah. So they keep the snow from falling on the trail, and you're trying to get the trail so that you need the absolute minimum amount of snow.
Yeah, we take as much as we can get.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you realize, though, that in Junior Nordic, that's like the most fun thing you can do is to hit the branch with your ski pole so the snow falls on your coach's head.
Well,
you're kind of taking that away.
Junior Nordic is pretty short, so they only
okay.
get the lower limbs.
I got you.
We need the senior Nordic to grab the topper ones.
So
that's what they're doing today.
Uh-huh. This is a pretty cool, I mean, you guys have a lot of equipment. I was pretty amazed looking at your bunker back there, just how much equipment is there. I mean, are you guys, you know, you've got chainsaws, you've got this like little vehicle to drive in, tractors, big tractors, little tractors, groomers, all kinds of stuff.
Yes, and it seems like we always need a little bit more.
Yeah, okay. So don't emphasize that, huh?
In particular, we'd like to have an excavator, but, you know, were you familiar with the big push to get that dozer that's sitting over there?
I knew that there was something going on, and I saw a picture of it online, yeah.
Yeah, well, we just came up with that, and it was kind of a generous people made that happen. And so now, you know, the other part of the whole trail revitalization, if you will, is pretty much the dozer and excavator, so we end up having to rent that stuff, and it's kind of expensive, and so maybe next year we'll see.
Yeah, so what do you guys do to this particular trail to improve it? I mean, it definitely, does it look wider than it was?
Well, it's wider. It's maybe a bit wider. We've got there were a lot of things where there were problems with visibility. There was with the where do I start with this?
Yeah.
There was a lot of problems with the shape of the trail. And during low snow year, if you get a trail that's amazingly out of shape, then it becomes really challenging to do much. And all the trails out here.
Do much in terms of grooming, because the grooming blade is flat and the trail is curved, basically?
Yes, basically.
Okay.
The tiller on the back that kind of does the shaping of stuff. So anyway, was there a big national event coming up here next year? He's wandering off, but
yeah.
And so I believe they wanted to race out here, and these things don't meet standards as far as, you know, what those guys expect to see to race national events on. So that was part of the motivation. But we basically have an agreement with the Muni about trail maintenance, and there's a long-term trail maintenance plan where they there's specifications about width and visibility and all the they spec each trail, and so left. Without any kind of maintenance, nature reclaims these things pretty quickly. So they're on like a 10 to 15 year cycle. We'll do a trail, and then 10 to 15 years hence, we'll get on it again.
Uh-huh. So you just do it basically with your maintenance funds and your regular guys and your own equipment?
Yes.
Okay. And so on this particular one, you came out with like a dozer and just bladed it, or what did you do?
It was an excavator and a dozer. Uh-huh. And there's, you get the basic shape with the dozer, and then there's places where it will probably get back out here with that big tractor and a roller and kind of put a final on it. We left this a little bit uncompacted to try to get some grass promoted, and if we pack it too much, it makes it hard to get the grass going. So,
does grass help in the early season to keep the snow in place?
Grass is more about just stabilization of the soils. It's not so much about keeping the snow anywhere.
Uh-huh.
So. We don't want the dirt moving around.
Yeah, so and then the volunteers are just sort of cleaning up, getting the roots out and the sticks, and I mean it already seems really good when you look at it. So,
yeah, and that's that's really great. That they it's time consuming work, and it's kind of backbreaking to get the roots and the sticks and stuff, but it's really helpful. I mean, all those cats, they've all had their mirrors knocked off, and and the roots. And, you know, it's especially important on those low snow years, early season, when you're trying to be out here with a snowmobile and you got roots poking up and stuff like that. It actually gets to be quite a hazard.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, cool. And I'm sorry, your name again?
My name is Bill Bryan.
Bill Bryan.
I'm primarily out in Chugach Eagle River. Oh, I do the trails out there by CHS, and Eagle River High School has a few, and Mirror Lake Middle School.
Well, it's good to have met you, because I go on the trail thing where they say, like, what's been groomed, and it'll say, like, Bill has been out with the whatever, and I go, oh, who's Bill? Okay.
Actually, well, that's actually my wife, Annette, that writes that up.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, she would know.
We appreciate it. You know, it's really cool to wake up in the morning and say, okay, what's good, you know, and actually have the information there.
No, that's, and we recognize that. We've made a pretty big effort to try to get, you know, there's some folks out there that have kind of pushed for some real-time, you know, trackers on the equipment and stuff like that to sort of, you know, so, but we find that, you know, I mean, there's a little period right after you groom it with those cats where you really need to let it sit. That's why we're out in the middle of the night. Otherwise, it, you know, it takes a while for it to set up.
Huh.
And so our solution is that, you know, that morning thing. We try to get out there kind of as quickly in the morning so people get the information where we've been, but Not too early, you know. So
tell me what sounds like you have to work at night a lot during the wintertime. What's your work day like? I mean,
well, we generally try to pick that period when there's nobody out there, and so we can do our thing, and then it has a chance to sit for 2 to 3 hours and set up. And in conditions, I mean, there's times when it's super cold, the stuff sets up immediately behind you. But for the most part, in average conditions, it takes about 3 or 4 hours after it's been tilled, you know, for it to kind of get the body back. And so, you know, otherwise, if you ski it too early, you cut in a long ways, and it makes ruts. I don't say ruts, but big cut marks. So.
Right.
So, you know, we're out, I get launched maybe out Chugach, maybe 9 and 10 o'clock at night, finish up 2, 3 in the morning, something like that.
That sounds like a brutal work schedule. I don't think I'd enjoy that.
You know, it's not that bad. I mean, you just get your schedule moved back and take your vitamin D.
Is this a full-time year-round job for you?
It is. We do the grooming out there, and then the summer work, they, you know, manage to keep me busy all year round, and then we're about to get into our maintenance phase on all the equipment, you know, to kind of get everything all tuned up and ready to go. So
how do you get into this kind of work? I mean, just, you must be a kind of a mechanically adept person, and
it is kind of a mixed bag of what
I guess. Do you come from the ski perspective or from the mechanism?
Well, I did race a little bit in high school, but it was more about equipment and mechanicking. You know, spent my life working on stuff and grew up here. I actually grew up in the Chugach area out there, and the guy that kind of was in charge of this, he's since gone on a little bit, as Ben Powell, and he and I were friends, and so I was out at a lodge and kind of came to town looking for work, and he's like, hey, you know, so.
Yeah, Ben's great.
Oh, so you've met Ben.
Yeah, he's been on our show before when we did a show about the impact of climate change on sort of like about winter recreation.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he and I went to kindergarten together, so.
It's a small town, really.
It really is, actually.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Bill.
Indeed. It's good to meet you.
All right. So now I'm talking with Neil Fried, who's an old friend and has a recognizable voice as an economist who is frequently interviewed about economic conditions. And your family's been like involved with skiing for a really long time, right?
Yeah. I've skied as long as I've lived in Alaska, which is 19. Well, I skied before that, but cross country since 73. So my kids were in junior Nordic and my daughter skied for West. So yeah.
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 You know, when I look at these trails and I think about what it was like when I was a kid here, I'm not sure they'd built Kincaid yet. You know, we had trails out by the north side of the airport, you know, and it's amazing what we've got, right?
It is unbelievable. I mean, it's just great. I mean, I live downtown. I can ski all the way from, above Sur Flat Top to home, no problem at all. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I think we kind of take it for granted a little bit at this point because it's been this way for a long time. But, it's a unique thing about our community that makes it really, you know, really something that most people could not even imagine, that you could ski kind of right from your house. You don't have to drive and go to these amazing places.
You know, and people, and I try to explain that to people all the time, and I think they have a real hard time understanding it.
Uh-huh.
It's just really hard, but no, it's unbelievable. It really is one of the gems of the city.
Yeah. Is that what brings you out here to volunteer, or is it more just like it's fun to get out with people on Saturday morning?
Well, more or less. I mean, last night I was visiting Mark, who's out here too, and he just made me feel guilty. I didn't even know this was happening.
Yeah.
And then my wife decided not to go biking this morning, so I thought, well, what else am I going to do today? So
uh-huh.
I thought it was a good idea, so I came out here with him.
Have you done this kind of stuff before?
No, I have not. I felt guilty about not doing it, but I come out here and use these facilities, but I have not done this before.
I'm sure you buy your trail pin, though.
I do. I do buy my trail pin.
Okay, because if you said no to that, then I'd say, what the heck?
I do know. I have some friends that don't buy the trail pins, and we give them a hard time.
Yeah. Well, this is pretty easy work, really. I mean, since we're walking through the woods picking up sticks, I mean, it's like you get a lot of credit for it. You know, I'm not doing much.
That's very true. It's very true. All the hard work's done by, I think, a lot of the other guys. But it's fun. A beautiful day. Run a few animals. It's great.
All right. Thanks, Neil. Neil Fried. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Today we are talking about trail work at Kincaid Park, getting the cross-country ski trails ready for winter. Stick with us as we continue. I had a great Saturday out there with a bunch of volunteers. So I'm with Mark Spano, who was on the APU Nordic Masters group that we did for a couple of years together. And I wasn't too surprised to see that most of the people out here were a lot of people out here were people I knew. It's kind of a tight little skiing community. How do you get involved in coming out to do this work?
Well, I've gotten involved in doing trail maintenance the last couple of years, mostly with Chugach State Park. There's a group that Alaska Trails has developed called the Alaska Trail Stewards, who is doing work primarily in Chugach State Park, but we're branching out to the Forest Service and later to BLM. And so it just stems from that general interest in trail maintenance, that not enough resources to do the job properly, so I think volunteers are part of the answer.
Yeah, I mean, look, you kind of got the whole, you got sort of the backpack, you got the bear spray. It looks like you've done, and the tools and stuff, looks like you've done a bit of this. I mean, is it something you enjoy?
Yeah, I do enjoy it. It's getting outside, getting, you know, some physical work. It's feeling like you're giving a little something back to the community, making the trails that you use a lot better. And so it gives a lot back to, I think, people who are volunteering.
So it's not a huge crew here. I don't know, were you involved in organizing this at all, or do you know how?
No, I wasn't. And one thing I noticed, for those Luddites like myself who aren't on Facebook, it wasn't really publicized very well on the website. And so...
Yeah. It's kind of word of mouth kind of thing, huh?
Well, unless you're a Facebook person, which I guess most people are, but not everybody.
Well, and then also, like, Facebook has to decide that's something that you should know about, right? I mean, it's not you could be on Facebook, but maybe it doesn't highlight it, and you might overlook it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a good enough, you know, it's a nice group of people here. So are you feeling like some of us are, like, can't wait to ski?
Oh, I'm incredibly eager right now. I hope we have another wonderful winter like last winter. So yeah, I'm definitely thinking about it.
Do you still do a lot of racing?
Well, I never did a lot of racing. I love to ski, and as you said, I was at the Masters group because I want to become a better skier and learn technique, but I never was a racer.
So it must give a nice, I mean, if you've done this work, it must be nice to sort of go use the trails that you worked on, huh?
Yeah, and I've noticed that since they did some cleanup work on some of the trails in the past few years, leveling it out, flattening it, you're able to ski on it with a lot less snow. And I think that's important given the winters we've had recently, that any little bit that can enable you to ski on less snow is a good thing.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that we're kind of like out here being a climate change adaptation crew here. You know, that in the past when there was a decent amount of snow, maybe it didn't matter that much. But now it kind of really does matter a lot of days of the winter.
Yeah, no, you're right.
How long have you been skiing in Anchorage?
Since I came here, which was 81.
Yeah, so have you seen a difference in the winters?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't remember. We would have an occasionally winter with not a lot of snow, but yeah, it seems like they're warmer and more bad
stuff in a row, I think. I mean, that's the thing. It's like more, just a percentage of bad days compared to good days has gotten a lot higher.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And I wonder how that's affecting sort of the skiing community and, you know, how many people are staying involved, especially after the three bad winters we had previous to this last winter.
Well, I don't know the numbers, but my understanding is that the Nordic Ski Club's lost members over the last 2-3 years, and I think that was in part due to those two bad winters we had with no snow.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on here, Mark.
Yeah. You're welcome.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
I'm Charles Woolforth. Outdoor Explorer today is about trail work, getting the ski trails in shape for the coming winter. And there's a bunker out there at Kincaid Park, an old Cold War bunker that's full of equipment, and equipment's parked all around it. I got a tour, and for the gearheads out there, this will be interesting to learn about the equipment that is used to keep the trails ready to use.
All right, so now we're back from we're doing the trail work, and we're at the equipment bunker. I guess it's an old Cold War bunker where all the equipment is kept. And Mike Miller is going to, who is the board member in charge of operations, is going to sort of tell us about what they do here. I think everybody's interested in hearing.
Well, of course, in the wintertime, we groom the trails and we have various pieces of equipment, a fleet of snow machines with an attachment on the back that we use first to kind of pack the snow. And then when it gets deep enough, we can use the snow cats. And we have the newest big one we use here is a Piston Bully 600. It's about a 300 horsepower motor, and it has an 18-foot wide tiller. There's four 100s, and they get a couple of them are here, one's at Hillside, and one's at Chugiak most of the time. Then we have two 1980-era 200s, which were used to be the mainstay, but they're, like I said, they're 25, 30 years old, and so they're back up right now, so in case something happens, we can use them here in Kincaid. So
that's quite a fleet of equipment, and you just got a new tractor or something, right?
Right, so that's the winter stuff. The summer stuff we have, we just got a new John Deere 450 tractor. We have it's a big John Deere four-wheel drive farm tractor right now it's got a side mower on it. We have a little Kubota tractor that we mow most of the trails with a couple times a year, and we've got other various attachments for trail building in there in the back. A wide rototiller and a thing called a Mary Crusher that's kind of like a rotomill for the highway. It'll chew up the roots, and that's what we used out here on this thing mounted on the green John Deere.
So. Do you guys want to look around at the end? You want to give us a tour?
Well, yeah, we can. Yeah. Inside room.
Go ahead, we'll follow. This is the big expensive one, right?
No, is the 100.
Wow.
So this is one of the smaller cats we use all over the place.
Uh-huh.
So let's go out and go around back. Turn that off for a while.
Seven groomers all told?
Wow. Four, six, seven, yeah.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
And how many guys work out here during the course of the year?
Usually, it depends. If we're making snow, there's about three full-time people and three or four volunteers. So.
And that's all paid for by trail pins, right? I mean, that's government money or anything.
Well, yes, that's right. We have a contract with the school district to put on the high school races and groom for them. But other than that, it's trail pins and donations. So these are the old 200s that are standbys.
And those were operating all the way from the 80s on, huh?
Yeah. They've been,
Probably like every part has been replaced at least once.
I think so. This is the 600, the big one. We've got a couple of trucks here that are slider bed, like the wrecker guys use, that we move the 100 of the small cats around on. Here's another piston bully. This is a 100.
Is that tiller on the back, is that what you use for breaking up the ice?
Or even when you get hard pack? They'll come and use the tiller, and then on the back there's a thing you call a comb. That's the yellow thing that leaves the marks.
The corduroy marks.
The corduroy marks, and then if you're setting a classic track, you can have either one or two of them.
Oh wow!
At the same time, so
This is really specialized stuff with a lot of hydraulics and stuff. You must have some pretty good mechanics.
Yeah, Craig's a good mechanic, and it's all Austrian, I think, or German. So
so it's made well, huh?
Yeah. Over there we have an old roller we inherited, and the Mary Crusher, and some more mowers, and the rototiller. This is the leftover of an old snowcat that I think that's the one that fell off the helicopter going into... coming down from the glacier, the camp.
I hadn't heard about that. That sounds bad.
That was quite a way back.
Don't drop your grooming equipment from the air. That's a rule number one. Yeah.
So the Connex boxes have racing, supplies in them, and over here's our fan.
That's
guns.
A really big loader. Is that yours too?
Yeah. We.
Just for moving snow around.
Well, that and in the dirt, mm-hmm. in the summertime, depends on what we were doing on the trails. It was not a donation, but it was pretty cheap. That's that's a 1965 or 6 model.
Oh, wow.
Looks old.
Serial number 99.
That's amazing, man.
So these are the fan guns that we can move around and make snow.
So water is pumped into them, and then they make a mist?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's basically the same theory as a pressure washer.
Huh.
But if you look in the other end of it, you can see all the little nozzles.
Wow. Kind of looks like a jet plane, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's a fan in there that helps. And you can set these things to rotate side to side and get them in the angle. So if the wind's blowing, you kind of want to, set them so that the snow is going to get blown away from them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do the fill the tunnel. We make a big pile right out in front of it when the wind blows from the north, and then push it in with the cats.
Huh. So you have like 7 or 8 of these?
There's
roughly
7. Yeah. And there's one of them's bigger than the rest of them. Most of these use about 30 gallons a minute.
Wow. So you have to have a good water supply.
Yeah, so we have 2 wells. There's one here and there's one back up over there. And we're getting about 150 gallons a minute. The system was designed for over 300. So we can't run everything at the same time because we don't have enough water. And these things, if they run out of water or the pressure drops too much, they shut themselves down. And the first year we had a problem. They had they have a real fine filter in them and getting sand out of the well or construction sand when they built the water lines. But it's kind of cleared up now, so it's not nearly the problem it used to be. So,
and there's some permanent ones out there too, right?
And there are lances out there all along the trails that are permanent, and you can swing them too. And but they operate the same way, and a couple of them have weather stations on them, so you get the temperature and the pressure, wind direction and stuff from them. And in the bunker, there's a computer that runs the whole thing. So
the issue with the water is just that there's not enough groundwater here at Kincaid?
Right. Yeah, that's right. It was the one well up on the hill is below sea level at the bottom of it, so I can't remember exactly how deep it is, but no.
Huh, that's the problem. So, and then you must have a lot of underground piping that you have to keep from freezing.
Well, the Kincaid Project Group raised the money for that. And the water lines are 10 foot deep, 8 to 10 foot deep. So, yeah, and it's all a ductile iron pipe. So.
Wow, just like plumbing in the city, yeah.
Exactly.
So when you put on a big race, like you're putting on these big national races this winter, you must have to have like all hands on deck and a lot of people to come out and get everything ready.
Well, we hope to have the snow ready before they come.
Yeah,
that is.
But I'm just looking at these barriers and all this other stuff that you set up and all that.
Yeah, and we have a real core of volunteers for the racing program, and I mean we have all the. There's 2 more racks of that blue fence down in the stadium they're using today on the cross country race. But they can set up the whole stadium area in half an hour, 45 minutes. Just because everybody knows, has done it so many times before.
You were talking about the green grunts.
Yeah, the green grunts. So
how did you get into this personally?
my older daughter decided in junior high that she needed to do an event or something like an activity to get into college. And so she started cross-country skiing at Mears, and I just started helping. And then I was working at the time with a longtime ski parent, and he kind of sucked me in. And I've been helping Tim Brabbitt's time almost, oh geez, almost 30 years. So.
Wow. So, and this is a volunteer thing for you?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It must take up all of your time, though.
Well, it didn't, because I just retired in the last year or so. Oh, okay. But it's taken up a lot more time now because I have free time. So,
And you're kind of responsible for this. And do you have a background in running equipment or something?
No, I had a background in construction. Uh-huh. But I also lived in a town, but I worked on a farm when I was a kid. Uh-huh. So I know how to run the tractors and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, because some of this stuff is so old and must just need constant repair. And I just didn't think that would take a lot.
Well, it's not
the heavily used. Some of
it's not used like it would be if it was a construction company. It's put that way.
Right.
The snowcats get used, but the rest of it is pretty easy work.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. It's Mike Miller, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And you're the head of operations for the board of NSAA.
That's kind of, I used to call myself the trails chair. All right. But that's what it turns out to be.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
We're back in the studio. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. And most of today's show was from that trail work we did a couple of Saturdays ago. And now we're going to talk about one of the reasons we're doing trail work, which is getting ready for these national races that are going to be coming up this winter. And the organization obviously is already taking place. This is a really big deal for Anchorage, something that doesn't come around very often. And with me right now is the organizer and the president of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, Joey Cateranicchio, and she's sounds like she must be the busiest person around. Tell me about the event that you're organizing right now.
Thanks for having us. It's the 2018 U.S. Cross Country Ski Championships. The last time we hosted the event was 2010, and it's a precursor to the Olympic Games, which will be happening in Pyeongchang. Many of the athletes aspiring to go to the Olympics will be here competing at this event in January.
So is this a qualifier where they need to do well in this in order to make it to the Olympics?
It's part of the qualifying. So there is other areas and ways they will qualify, but it does count as part of it.
Okay. And it's also the U.S. Championship. So this is sort of the best skiers in America doing their very best.
Correct. There'll be about 400 athletes that come and race at Kincaid, many of them flying in from all over parts of the nation, and including a lot of local athletes. And we should look to a lot of our local athletes to actually fare quite well. A hometown course and about 100 coaches. It brings in about 1,000 people into our town of Anchorage to showcase our city and, you know, show where the Keek and Randalls of the Olympics have come.
Yeah, amazing. And we've done it before. It's not the first time, which kind of shows our ski community is certainly world class, and we obviously produce world class skiers. What are the attractions for the national ski community for having the championships here in Anchorage?
Yeah, well, being a northern city, you know, our climate is an incredible area for, in the past, snow. Well, let's hope that we get that.
Right.
But Kincaid is a world-class venue, and it's got homologated trails that are in the standard of FIS, which is the Federation of International Skiing.
What does homologated mean?
Homologated means that there's a standard at the highest level, and you get a certificate and basically map your course and get it certified by FIS. And FIS is the governing body at the international level of skiing, which then turns into USSA, which is the national organizing committee.
Are they looking for trails that are just particularly difficult or particularly sort of have some quality that...
Correct. A little bit of both.
So it can't be too easy, in other words.
Can't be too easy. They're homologated to a standard of height and distance and different types of hills and width and different types of events you can. And there's multiple locations in the country that can host this, but Kincaid being one of the one of the ones that can, and really a great location to do that.
Seems like quite a bit of work has been done over the last decade or so to be able to do international caliber races and have people be able to see them.
It is. You know, with the social media, we're getting more and more into the fact that locations need to be able to live stream these events so that they're nation and actually international. People are watching these from all over the place. The events are getting more and more popular, just in the fact that cross-country skiing is no longer start in the stadium and come back 40 minutes later. It's loops around the stadium, it's sprinting, it's multiple different diverse events with a little bit more excitement.
And so when you, in other words, it used to be that like they leave and you just stand around and then the winner comes back. And now you've redesigned the races so that they go around and around, and it's a little bit more like an auto race where you actually see who's ahead.
Correct.
You can kind of cheer.
Uh-huh. Correct. A lot like probably the inline skating happening at the Olympics with Apollo Ohno. We do the same thing in our sprint championships. And where we have six people going at once and eliminating each other, we'll have two of those going on. So we'll have a classic sprint and a freestyle sprint. And then we'll also
have...
That's Keegan Randall's specialty. Mm-hmm. Yep. And a couple others now. So we're looking at some potential gold medals in Pyeongchang with some of the kiddos that were born out of Kincaid.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It is. It's a really nice event for our elite kids, but it's also a really nice event for our community. It kind of showcases all levels. Everybody's actually open to be able to compete in this event.
Really?
So
you don't, I mean, it's the U.S. Championships, but you can come out even if you're a duffer? Wouldn't recommend it.
It
huh?
is. Actually, we open it up to everybody. We hope that you can actually sustain the course. But the U.S. Championships is an open event. And we have...
Do you have waves so that the slow skiers don't mess up the elite?
It is actually done by points. And so skiers that have probably been racing longer have higher points for seeding, and they would have a more advantageous spot. And then if some local skier, maybe a master skier from the age of 20 on up, can ski, but we also will have a lot of juniors. So a lot of high school age skiers are also able to come, and we've got junior distance formats. So really, it's a great race for everyone to be able to compete with our top skiers. And
this sounds like a setup for a Walt Disney movie where where the guy who never wins anything ends up in the Olympics.
They may not end up in the Olympics, but they can absolutely come and compete at Kincaid at the East Championships. There's probably a few more hurdles they would have to pass.
It's not really a movie, right? Okay.
But it could be. We could.
The last time we had the U.S. Championships here, and we actually covered it on Outdoor Explorer and had some of the racers in, James Southam, who's now retired, I believe won a national championship in a distance event. You had some challenges with the weather, and it wasn't the challenges we've had recently with no snow. It was, like, too cold.
We did. And James was there, a great competitor and a great advocate of skiing. In 2009, the weather was too cold to operate most of the events. We were able to...
So that wasn't the last... That was the time before last.
That was the time before. We were able to have a second chance with 2010. We hosted it for two full years in a row, and we planned for every opportunity. We had a change of venue. We had the National Guard surplusing snow at the airport. We had every plan we could in case we didn't have snow, but we never had a plan that it'd be too cold. So,
well, what do you do about it, right? You bring out heaters or something?
We had some people that might not want to come back the next year. Let's just say that. It was a -4 is the FIS cutoff, -4 Fahrenheit. And I think we barely got to -10 on most of those days.
Wow.
So
this must be, I mean, I imagine your life is incredibly full. I know you're a mom and you're a business person and you are the head of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. And now you're also putting on the biggest skiing event in the country. The stress of worrying about the weather, I think, would just be unbearable.
It is. Having done it the first time, I felt like it was actually a little bit of depression that came in trying to will these races and not knowing, and you had people coming to your birthday party and not having the games ready is like every day during that cold spell. We are a little bit more prepared now in 2018. Maybe not so much for the cold. That's really one of those unknowns. But we have snowmaking now, and we did not have snowmaking in 2010. So we were able to prepare a little bit more in case it's warmer. And really, you just have to prepare and hope, you hope weather's on its side. And
what's the date?
So the dates are January 3rd through the 9th. The competitions are January 3rd, January 5th, January 7th, and January 8th.
So that should be good, but maybe not. I mean, it's like, it's not as if it were in like late February or something.
No, for the most part, we have had some low snow, and mm-hmm. especially even going into January. This past year, we were really dependent on the snowmaking loop mm-hmm. in the last couple of years, but that's also what's saved our sport. And so knowing that we have that, it's plenty to run a great event. Mm-hmm. We just hope we have more so that we can get our courses a little bit further. That would keep us on a constricted kilometers.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm talking with Joey Catanicchio, who is the president of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage and is organizing the U.S. Cross Country Ski Championships coming to Anchorage in January. Are you looking for help? Are you looking for volunteers? It seems like it might be something pretty fun and exciting to volunteer for, because you are around the best skiers in the country doing their very best skiing and getting ready for the Olympics.
We are looking for volunteers, and we have about 200 volunteers that help daily at the event. Some of them for the whole week. We've got a place on the Nordic Ski Association website where you can go and click on volunteer and sign up. And you can be contacted and volunteer for 1 day. You can volunteer for 4 days. You can volunteer for all sorts of things. So absolutely.
Okay. And we already had some volunteers out getting the trails ready. And I guess that's a big part of it, is getting the trails very, very smooth so that a minimal amount of snow will allow you to hold the race.
Yeah, we were doing summer work for a couple of reasons, just to make sure for the homologation portions. But we also do mass starts where you're sending out waves of 80 at once, so we need to make sure that the course and the corners and the trees can appropriately ski well so that those skiers have no obstacles.
Right, because they'll be spreading out all over the trail trying to pass one another.
Correct.
80 people at once, that must be exciting to see.
That's one of our larger fields, but yeah, we do have that going on in one of our types of races. Mm-hmm. So
how many races actually take place?
We'll have 4 full races, 2 sprints and 2 distances. And the program will be featured in the Coast magazine. Okay. So around town, if anyone's looking at the December issue, everything they'll want to know about the event, where to go, the maps and the distances and a little bit more, it will all be mm-hmm. located there. And it's also on our website.
It's on the NSAA website.
Correct. Right. It's got its own, but there's a link to it.
And we will link to that from outdoorexplorer.org. Well, talking to, and I know you have some serious challenges with weather in the last few years, and the snowmaking has at least kept us skiing a little bit, although I don't personally don't want to go out and ski 10 times around, but I guess if you're on a team, that's a really good thing to have. It'll keep you in business. How has that affected your membership and your ability to raise money? That we had 3 bad, this last winter was pretty good. We're praying for a good winter this year, but then the 3 previous ones were pretty poor.
It was tough on the organization for sure, and actually probably the community. If you're going to live in Alaska and in a northern climate, we need to get outside. And cross-country mm-hmm. skiing is huge to keep you healthy and mentally and physically. And those 3 snowfalls, we were down in numbers for not only trail sponsorship, which we do groom basically solely on memberships and mm-hmm. Donations. There's no budget with the city that does groom the portions of the trails that we groom, which is Kincaid Hillside and parts of the
Russian
rest
Jack.
Of that Russian Jack. The city does groom the coastal trail when they can.
And you do Beach Lake too, or is that?
We do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We do up in Eagle River too. And so when people are out skiing, they're not donating. And the same thing with even our junior Nordic kids at that age. It wasn't fun if you don't have snow to ski on.
Right.
You know, you can only run for so much. Last winter, it was a really nice reprieve to be able to come back outside, and people kind of remembered about it. And with warmer trends, it is something that we have to continue to look at. And it just shows that snowmaking is so important. We'd like to actually branch that out and make that go further so you don't have mm-hmm. to ski round and round. But it's really expensive.
Yeah, expensive, technically challenging, big maintenance challenges, everything else. Yeah.
Correct.
So did you, when we had the good snow year last year, did you see the membership pop all the way back up to what it had been before? I noticed that the Tour of Anchorage numbers didn't get up to what they had been. So I thought maybe some people have kind of lost heart or sort of forgotten about what they loved or they've bought fat bikes or
yeah, I think you're right on all of those accords. It did come up from the previous year of we weren't back to the same numbers of the 3,000s, but I do think that people have done some alternative snow biking. It's nice to marry those two back together, and mm-hmm. we look forward to the Tour of Anchorage gaining more numbers. It is a slow return, but it's definitely more than the year that we did not have snow.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully this big U.S. championship Championship will get tons of media attention and get tons of spectators. People start remembering why they love skiing and why they love winter and what a big part of Anchorage it is.
You know, in 2010, we saw the trends go up. After somebody does host a large event, you bring in about 250 volunteers, most of them not elite skiers. They tend to have kind of the buzz and the energy and stay really helping for the next couple of years. That's how we kind of rebirth our volunteer system. And so then all of a sudden more programs can start. People wanted to learn to ski. We had master's programs that started after that. And really, I do believe that these types of events does re-energize the city.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's exciting to look forward to it, and I'm sure we'll be covering it more on Outdoor Explorer. And thank you, Joey, for all of the work you do, because I know you're a volunteer. Putting on an event like this is huge, and running this huge Nordic Ski Association as chairman is a big job. And so thank you on behalf of skiers.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having us and all the support you give us.
Great. That's Joey Catarnicchio, is the president of the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, talking about the U.S. championships that are coming up. Earlier in the show, we talked to lots of folks with the NSAA and volunteers who are working out on the trails at Kincaid. That's all for today's show. Our producer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Duro. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.